Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Good morning and welcome to this week's Farming Programme with me, Andy Marsh, once again sitting in for Steve Orchard. He'll be back next week, however. Today we talk about the possible new legislation on dairy farm contracts with the Farming Minister.
We do need to build that confidence because, you know, I want to see the next generation coming into dairy farming and having the confidence that they're doing the right thing, joining that business and building a career and a life for themselves.
This week is Farm Safety Week. We find out all about that.
We know there were 21 farm workers killed last year while doing their jobs. We are starting to see safety improvements in some areas, but the pace of change is slow.
Plus, we hear about a new online guide about cover crops, preview the Driffield show, and look at the weather for the week ahead. And of course, agronomy with Sean, the livestock report with Oliver, and the grain market report with Kit.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Now, you may recall Steve spoke to the Farming Minister, Mark Spencer, recently. Well, Mr. Spencer was at this week's Great Yorkshire Show and spoke to journalists there about plans to change legislation designed to make contracts fairer for dairy farmers. Here's a little of what he had to say.
For the first time in legislation, they're going to have the power of that ombudsman, that regulator behind them, who'll be able to referee, if you like. And I think in the past, there hasn't been a referee, so you can't really sort of cry foul. The only thing you can do is walk away from the contract that's been mistreating you. I think having that regulator behind you and the transparency as well, so you know what you're signing up to and you know how that price is being driven, I think will give a bit of confidence to the dairy sector. We do need to build that confidence because, you know, I want to see the next generation coming into dairy farming and having the confidence that they're doing the right thing, joining that business and building a career and a life for themselves.
Will the regulator have teeth?
Absolutely. So they'll be able to intervene if there is that mistreatment. Now, I hope that we won't ever get to that point where the regulator has to step in, because with the knowledge that there is that power behind the regulations, then people will behave in a right and proper way. And there are lots of good examples of where it does work, but I think we need to encourage that good practice and stamp on the small number of examples where it's not worked so well.
Also at the show, our reporter Cathy Green spoke to Angus Gowthorpe, who's a farmer who grows a lot of cover crops, which of course allows farmers to ensure soil isn't left bare. She also asked him about the current state of the agricultural sector.
So the talk today was to launch the UK Cover Crop Guide, which is an online guide to help get across the benefits of growing a cover crop for the soil health, for compaction issues, or maybe you might be growing that cover crop to feed livestock over winter, so multiple different applications. And so there's four sections. That's the first section of the cover crop. The second section is seed selection, so selecting guidance on and assistance on what species you're going to plant within that cover crop mix. And then the guide on establishment, so how you may establish it, whether you're broadcasting it into a growing cash crop that's about to be combined, or whether you're drilling it after harvest. And then finally, the termination of that cover crop in spring.
And what was the message you'd like the audience to have taken away?
The primary message, I suppose, is how much benefit a cover crop brings within the rotation for the soil health. The ability now to find a one-stop shop, independent guide for what species you would include in the cover crop and then how to grow it and terminate it.
And well received, do you feel like the people kind of, that message landed?
Yeah, I think that message is landing very well. There's a huge amount of interest in cover crops now, both from farmers that are farming conventionally, but also farmers that are farming in a more regenerative mindset. They're looking to improve the soil health and build the soil health.
And as yourself as a farmer, how has the last 12 months been on the farm?
It's been another ever challenging year with the weather. A relatively dry winter, then a very dry January, February, very wet March. Every year is different, every year has its challenges, but always busy.
Are you seeing rising costs hitting now? We know obviously volatility in Europe and costs associated with that.
Yeah, so costs have fluctuated. Obviously we had the big jump in fertiliser, particularly the year before last, but that's knocking onto the crops we're growing this year. And the increase in energy, whether it be fuel for the tractors or whether it be electricity for the grain dryer. Then the reduction or the fall in commodity prices, so wheat sub £200 a tonne, barley hovering around the 150 mark, it's having a big effect and long-term impact on farm profitability.
And what's the 12 months looking like then with with regards going forward with, in terms of costs?
Can anybody tell me what Putin's going to do in the next 12 months? That'll be, to have that in the crystal ball would be marvellous. It remains tight with high costs and reduced from those peaks, reduced commodity price levels, but, and I suppose to chuck into the mix, the falling BPS payment values, but SFI is really coming into its own now, and the benefits from SFI 23 that's been launched. For the way I farm, I tick a lot of boxes. I can claim a good income from the SFI. We should never be reliant on those subsidies. Because of how I'm farming, I can claim a lot of that back, as it were.
Have you had to change anything else with regards to cost to kind of cut those margins and put you in a good, better place?
Yeah, so we're always concentrating on costs, whether that be machinery, whether it be labour, whether it be input costs to the crops and to the animals as well, and always viewing those with a microscope, what is actually necessary, what is needed, what's going to pay back with a positive benefit.
Now, this week is Farm Safety Week, organised by the Farm Safety Foundation. I've been speaking to Stephanie Barclay, who's manager there.
It's a week where we bring the entire industry, over 5 different countries, together to remind everybody of the importance of working safely on farms, why it matters, and actually what is being done about it.
And when you say the importance, you have some interesting stats there that show us just why this is so important.
Well, the release of this year's Health and Safety Executive Fatal Injuries and Agriculture Report tomorrow, it always serves as a really somber reminder of why we were established as a charity and why something like Farm Safety Week matters. We know there were 21 farm workers killed last year while doing their jobs. We are starting to see safety improvements in some areas, but the pace of change is slow. It has the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK. Putting it into context, farming is so important to the economy, but it only accounts for 1% of the working population. It does, however, account for 18% of all deaths that happen in the workplace. It is more dangerous than construction. It's more dangerous than quarrying. And it's not just our problem. It's a worldwide problem. The International Labour Office employs half of the world's labour force in farming, but it's one of the 3 most hazardous sectors of activity.
Why particularly is that? Is that because of major farm machinery or being outside, or what is it?
Well, unfortunately, the agricultural mortality rates are stubbornly high, based and have been for 60 years for the same reasons. Working with machinery, workplace transport, livestock, falls from height, things falling on somebody. You know, all of these things are the same reasons that farmers have lost their lives in their 10s and their 20s and in their 30s right throughout the last 60 years. And actually, it's an ageing workforce. Farmers don't retire at 65. So often you have a 78-year-old doing a job that really they're not physically able for.
I would imagine that most farmers do take safety seriously. But having listened to the figures and what you're saying, there are a small minority that perhaps do not.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The majority of farmers out there are going about their job every single day, thinking about what could go wrong and putting things in place to prevent that. But we're still not seeing the widespread changes in attitude towards safety and the improvements in their behaviours that are going to start to bring those numbers down. I've always done it that way. I'm in a hurry. It costs too much. These are not good enough excuses for risk-taking, for poor maintenance of their equipment or unsafe working.
What would you like to see farmers doing specifically? Yes, you want them to be safer, but are there certain measures that perhaps farmers are skimping on that maybe they shouldn't be?
Well, farm safety is an investment. It's not a luxury. But everybody in the industry has a role to play to make the changes that we all want and we all need to see. Every single one of us that lives and works in farming needs to step up and take responsibility and challenge and change not only their own attitude, but the attitudes of the people that they're working with, so that we can make our farms safer places to work and to live.
I'm guessing that quite a few farms have a relatively small number of people working on them. And if they're down to just a handful of workers and somebody does get seriously injured, that has an impact on the way that farm works.
Absolutely. Everything is replaceable. You're not. And actually, when we're starting this week's campaign, Farm Safety Starts With Me is the theme that we're adopting for the campaign, because we all need to do more to address the poor safety record in the industry and make our farms safer.
And finally, just a quick message for farmers to sum up some of the things you've been saying. What is that key message?
So we're acknowledging that farming continues to have the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK and Ireland, and we need to change that. but it might suggest that it's something we're willing to accept. This could not be further from the truth. So like last year, we're going to throw the spotlight on 10 inspirational individuals and organisations working to drive the change in the industry. We're calling them farm safety heroes. So we're going to outline why we think that the farming industry is becoming a safer place because of them. Let's celebrate the best of farming and let's try and address the worst.
Next, it's on to agronomy and morning to Sean Sparling.
Yes, morning, Andy. More in the way of rain then since last week. You know, we prayed for it, now we've got it, and it's really making a difference to these fields now. Another 28 mil for me at home this week. Way more in some areas of the county. 20 mil in an hour around Lincoln Tuesday into Wednesday. But thunderstorms, again, rather than wet days. And where that rain came in on the back of high winds, the inevitability of flat barley has played out. Growth regs have really had their work cut out this year in these hot, dry conditions, and that's now very apparent in some fields, particularly on these overlaps. But we need plenty of sunshine really from now onwards to fill this grain, ripen and finish off these crops. Looking pretty good though, I think, in general out there. Wheat crops that were drilled in the middle of September have now been in the ground over 10 months, so they're turning really quickly. Winter barley being combined as soon as conditions allow, and the early indications are that it's doing reasonably well. So fingers crossed that that continues. So sugar beet then. We're starting to make plans for disease control to get underway, depending on the variety, the disease profile, location, past history. And past history, absolutely crucial from the point of view of Cercospora. Mild and hot and humid to wet weather is going to set Cercospora off. Because in 2020, if you remember, that was the really last bad year we had for Cercospora. And to be honest, if you had a problem with it that year, you're not likely to forget it. But if you had fields affected back then, and because it takes temperatures below minus 50 to kill Cercospora, and much higher temperatures than we get here in the UK to kill it that way too, and because it overseasons on old beetroot, beet spoil, volunteer sugar beet plant, other plants from the sugar beet family, if you had it back then and it's a Cercospora year, you will get it again this year. So keeping an eye on the BBRO Cercospora map warnings on their site or on the app is absolutely crucial. We do of course now have Revistar cleared for use in sugar beet, very good against all the diseases including Cercospora, and we also got of course registration for Caligula in sugar beet too last year, which again very good on Cercospora as well as the rust and the mildew. And we have Priory Extra and Angle, and of course we have Sulphur if it's just mildew. And like all sugar beet diseases, prevention's always going to be better than cure, particularly as the fungicides we have available to us, whether they're Priory Extra, Angle, Revistar, Caligula, they're all pretty much protectant rather than curative. So clearly timing is everything. You pay your money and you take your choice. So talk it through with your agronomist and choose what is the best tool for the job when that time comes. Most years, first fungicide seems to happen end of July, early August, but assume nothing and just stay alert. Also going to be very important to take the opportunity when that fungicide does go on to address any nutritional issues, manganese, sulfur, magnesium, all those deficiencies easy enough to find. If you've got boron issues, you get that laddered effect on the main stem of the leaf. Quite often, if it's worse than that, you'll see blackening on the crown and the leaves are blackened at the base too. But just watch boron when you mix it. It's not a good mixer. So if boron's your problem, you may well be better to treat that separately rather than risk ending up with a gloopy mess or worse in the sprayer. Sulfur is a fungicide, very good for powdery mildews, and that will correct sulfur deficiency too where it's applied as a fungicide. But as I say, at this moment, very little in the way of disease out here. Although with sugar beet worth £40 a tonne this season, I have absolutely no doubt that there will be those advisors already out on farm itching to get you to put your first fungicide on to make sure that you and they get three good expensive fungicides onto the crop this season. Just ask them the question as to whether that's really necessary. 15 years ago, one fungicide seemed to be plenty. 10 years ago, we were all doing it wrong unless we were putting two fungicides on. And now three applications seems to be the expected norm for many advisors, irrespective of whether there's actually a crop need or not. So just think about it. These are not cheap treatments. You'll get a good 3 or 4 weeks out of each application. So if you start at the first signs of disease in, say, the middle of August, that'll take you through to mid-September. A second fungicide applied mid-September will easily get you into mid-October, by which time the diseases are not flourishing, they're slowing down. And when the days are that much shorter and the temperatures are falling, so that growy weather is down to tick over levels, you really should question the need for that third fungicide, and of course whether you'll get more back from it than those who are selling you it. you have to get your money back from these fungicides. As long as it makes you more than it costs, and as long as not doing it isn't going to cost you more than doing it would, then that's the thing. If you're lifting your beet early, you should also make sure that harvest intervals are being observed, so ask your advisor about that as well. As I said though, little in the way of disease anywhere yet, so keep walking and keep assessing the crop so that the first application is timed as well as it can be. Any winter wheat fields that need pre-harvest glyphosate are few and far between for me, but just watch your dose rates. If you do go, 1.5 litres per hectare of a 360 gram formulation is about the limit you can apply on cereals pre-harvest, and at least a 7-day harvest interval. But with that relatively low dose rate, don't expect control miracles from applying to a dense mat of brome or big, dense, thick old areas of wiry spent blackgrass. And of course, the timing for glyphosate in the cereals when the grain moisture content falls below 30%. Below 30%, the crop is physiologically ripe, so therefore there can be no translocation movement of the glyphosate back to the grain. And that 30% moisture is when the grain will hold an imprint of your thumbnail. Winter bean crops on the homeward leg. Late diseases like rust and chocolate spot, they're going to help desiccate these crops. And if glyphosate's planned to finish them off, just like spring beans, the correct timing is 30% moisture or less. And that timing usually coincides with the majority of the pods being black. Spring beans podding well, final fungicides already on most of them. But the hot, dry conditions for the 6 weeks or so after drilling and through that crucial establishment period means a lot of spring beans are really short. Despite that though, they do seem to be podding reasonably well. Final fungicides on peas done too, and once those pods are filled, the peas are going to be on the way home as well. So again, thoughts will turn to spraying them off once they hit 30% moisture or less. For glyphosate, the bottom pods will be papery and they'll have hard rubbery peas in them. The middle pods will be pitted and going yellow with peas in them that are rubbery. And the top pods will still carry some green, but the peas are still able to be split with some firm pressure. Just get your advisor to keep an eye on them for you, and that's probably the easiest way to do it. The most important thing to remember if you do go out pre-harvest managing any crops with glyphosate is that you do not apply it to any seed crop or to a crop you intend to keep seed back from. Better to leave a bit unsprayed and combine it separately if that's the case. Glyphosate treated crops should not be kept for seed. All seed rape largely sprayed off, combine starting to roll as I speak, things getting sunnier, days warming up, everything drying up again with a bit of luck. So more on the first reports of rape and barley yields next week. Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme.
After the Lincolnshire and Great Yorkshire shows this Wednesday, it's the Driffield Show, if you fancy a bit of a trip over the Humber Bridge. I spoke to David Tight, who's Chief Executive of the Driffield Agricultural Society. He told us what's going on there.
We've got the Dancing Diggers coming back to us again. It's probably been about 12 years since we last had them, and they are literally backed by popular demand. They'll be in the main ring for a couple of times during the day. The real highlight for a lot of people is HRH, the Duchess of Edinburgh. So we're really lucky to have her on board joining us. So she'll be moving around the showground, looking at all the attractions, looking at all the different activities. And of course, this year in the livestock section, we've got 597 sheep, so that's a record entry. Definitely 200 up on where we were last year. Lots of pigs and lots of cattle and animals for people to see. And of course, those classes will be running throughout the day. And then we can move on. We've got the Countryside Arena, and then we've got the Activity Arena. We've got Dangerous Mike in the Activity Arena doing all sorts of stunts and daring tricks. We've got fly fishing, we've got sheep dogs, we've gun dogs, we've pond dipping in the Countryside Arena, we've got 350 trade stands. You could buy a tractor and a combine harvester or a pair of Wellington boots and a house at the Driffield Show this year. Really nice to see. Part of our educational remit, we've got the ladies and pigs doing pastry making and the pasty making for the kids to be involved in. We've got the agri-vehicle demonstration ring so people can go and ask the questions to the contractors and the farmers to actually ask, what does that bit of kit do? And they'll see the actual machines working and moving around in the area there.
I was going to say that agricultural shows, from my knowledge, they tend to be sort of a balance between people having a fun day out and also showing off agriculture and being quite important to farmers as well.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head. We are so many things to so many people. Great to bring the family, great to experience all the different things you wouldn't get up close to at any other time of the year. But also the farmers still come, they come to the trade stands, and we'll generally sell equipment off the stands at Driffield Show, which is a bit different to a lot of the other ones in the United Kingdom, but we still do get people doing deals on site. And there's still the standard slap up of a sole sticker on a combine when a farmer walks up on a decision and said, yep, I want that one. And then, of course, at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's been planned for 6 months. That's in his field, actually harvesting the next day.
And one crucial thing that you have is a number of seminars where you can discuss various agricultural issues, the kind of thing that's under discussion next week.
We actually have the Next Generation group that are doing a breakfast meeting this year, Influencers in Agriculture. So that's talking about how the role of social media, what the role of social media is playing in farming today, and how that can help promote it and help promote local food and using UK produce to the wider public, really. And actually trying just to get the general public to understand where their food comes from. The likes of McDonald's don't import potatoes for chips. They actually all come from our farmers all around us. And there's a lot of people that don't even understand little facts like that and don't realise it. So it's nice just to pass on details and ideas and facts that people are not really aware of.
I was going to mention, actually, the fact that you work quite closely with schools and you're rather big on education as well.
We certainly are. That's a massive part of our educational charitable remit. We do the Education Day back in May, a very successful one this year where we had 1,664 school kids. And then the night after that, we did our Countryside Careers Evening, which was one of the first ones in the country to be ever run. And that was to link 50 employers to potential employees. So we invited all the secondary schools in the East Riding, kind of the hinterland around the county as well. Actually, some of the parents came along, and I know one of them that actually got a job on the evening. What a success is that? So we've got those 50 businesses, and those two events are a fantastic event for us.
Lynx FM Farming Market Reports.
And we start off with Oliver Chapman from Louth Livestock Market. Morning, Oliver.
Morning, Andy. This week's weekly roundup from Louth, starting with a prime cattle which the steer sell to 279 pence per kilo, or £1,587 for J.C. Scolia Bomber, and all in average 272.82 pence per kilo. That wraps the cattle up and onto the sheep. One of the busiest markets for many and many years, with 1,096 lambs weighed and penned to SQQ at 284.34 pence per kilo, and all in average 286.33 pence per kilo. Top goes to Scrivelsby Farms Limited at 322 pence per kilo, or £157.50. Onto the cool ewes, and 132 penned, leaving all in average of £85.55 to top for DNA Fennec at £166 per head. And it must be said that 70% of the ewes for sale this week were lean, grazers, or even native bred ewes. That wraps the market report up this week. Huge thank you to everyone that's been and supported us, both buyers and vendors. We're back on tomorrow with all classes of prime cull and store cattle and prime cull and store sheep. This is Oliver Chapman for Masons and Louth Market. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver. Next, it's on to Kit Dickinson with the Open Fields Grain Market Report.
The market continued its downward path following the release of the July USDA report, despite global and major exporter wheat ending stocks being lowered. Wheat prices were caught in the headwinds of soybean and maize numbers, which, on face value, were negative. The US production was raised by 2 million metric tonnes on better yield expectations and an increased harvest area, exceeding even the highest analyst estimates. US wheat prices remain uncompetitive on the world market and need to fall into line with other origins to capture fresh demand. US spring wheat continues to suffer with drought across Canada, whose crop was lowered by 2 million tonnes. Argentine wheat production was lowered by 2 million as well due to the late plantings, combined with a lower area and yield expectation due to the ongoing dry spell. EU wheat production was lowered by 2.5 million tonnes, with Spanish wheat and barley crops in particular both 50% down on last year. Germany, France and Scandinavian crops are also being revised lower. Russian and Ukrainian wheat production was left unchanged despite reports of disappointing early yields because of dryness in the spring wheat areas from Russia. As we have come to expect, Chinese wheat and maize production was left unchanged despite reports of floods which have likely affected their wheat quality and yield, and ongoing heat which may lower their maize and rice crops. So looking at barley this week, EU prices have slid back at the start of harvest, which has provided stability to the market. Rain showers are forecast in France, which may slow harvest for a few days, but higher rainfall is forecast for Northern Europe, which will be positive for dry areas like Denmark and Sweden. We are now starting to see some of the first UK winter malting barley samples, and it is slightly worrying so far. The good news is the nitrogen levels are very usable, ranging from 1.5 to 1.7, and this looks like it is the same across the board. The main problem is retention levels, which range from 50% to 85%, with most falling back between 50 and 65%. I have heard that this is generally the same across the trade, with only some samples making over 85%. Screening levels are also high, ranging between 5 and 18%, and bushel weight around 62 to 70%. Most UK maltsters buy on a minimum of 85%, max 4% screenings, with a minimum of a 63 bushel, so specifications will have to be looked at before delivery. We have only seen a small percentage of samples overall, so hopefully the picture will improve going forward. Matif rapeseed has continued to be supported by the strength in global veg oil markets, as soybeans, palm oil and Canadian canola have all been trading near recent highs up until the USDA report this week. This week, the trade waited for the USDA report supply and demand, and the forecast for 2023-2024 soybean ending stocks at 300 million bushels is above the highest estimates and 45 million bushels above the 2022-2023 crop, despite drought conditions which stressed soya plants in the early stages of development. These high ending stocks sent Chicago soybean futures tumbling as the concerns about tight supplies were tempered. Matif rapeseed followed, closing off the highs and trading down again this week. So looking at prices, feed wheat for August, 165 to 174, November, 176 to 186, February, 179 to 189, and May, 182 to 192. Milling wheat premiums are circa £60, depending on quality and destination. Feed barley for August, 137 to 147, November, 152 to 162, February, 155 to 165, and May 24, 158 to 168. For malting barley premiums, please speak to your open field farm business manager. And lastly, oilseed rape, August, 358 to 368 off the combine, moving forward to November at 368 to 378, with a £1 carry in the market going forward.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Well, once again, it's a changeable week with rain at times and some sunny spells. Little bit of a breeze, but not too strong. Today, it's going to be a mixture of cloud and sunny spells and some scattered showers possible. Highs at 19. Pretty similar on Monday, although temperatures up a little bit. Tuesday is likely to be the wettest day of the week. Rain or drizzle throughout the day. Highs of 19. Wednesday, a return to sunshine and showers. Highs at 20. And Thursday and Friday is likely to be similar.
The week in agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
Well, that's it for this week. I'm Andy Marsh. I've enjoyed covering for Steve. He returns next week.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate, Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.